We welcome Mark Sinnott, the author of The Impossible Climb, Alex Hunold, El Capitan, and The Climbing Life, a book that is coming out today. And Mark, no stranger to the Mount Washington Valley and a lot of adventure around the valley. And I'm super happy to have you here, Mark. Thanks for coming in.
Hey, thanks, Roy. Great to be here.
This is great. Is this kind of a dream come true to get to have this book come out today?
I think it is. It's something that I've been dreaming about doing for a long time. I always had it in my mind that I would write a book someday, but I didn't really know how I would pull that off or exactly what it would be about. But when this idea, when I got this assignment to report on what Alex Hunold was doing in Yosemite, I realized that it was a perfect tentpole to hold up this kind of insider's story of climbing that I had always wanted to tell.
As Alex was the first one to solo free climb El Capitan back in 2017, right?
That's right. And that, you know, we call it The Impossible Climb. I guess I could maybe admit I'm not absolutely thrilled with the title, but it is somewhat fitting because, you know, I've done a lot of climbing myself in Yosemite, and I spent a lot of years there. And I'll say that during all those years, we never once even considered it. Right. It wasn't on the radar. It wasn't like, oh, this would be the holy grail to go up this cliff without a rope. It was so far beyond the pale that no one even considered it. I never heard a single person mention it, and it didn't really come onto the radar until Alex showed up on the scene.
And I was reading in the book, there's a particular road that you come up where you get the view, and it just is this spectacular view of this incredible face. And it's something you probably always kind of think about messing around on, but to do a free solo climb must have been unfathomable at that point.
Yeah, like I said, no one considered it. Alex, you know, as I detail in the book, first mentioned it to me as an idea when I went on my first expedition with him to Borneo in 2009. And he's a very interesting person. He's, you know, evolved and changed like we all do. But when I first met him, I would describe him as this guy that had no filters whatsoever. And that's just how he operated. And he would just tell it like it is, whatever popped into his head. And he was so frank and brutally honest about everything that right when I first met him, I figured, what the hell? I'll just ask him.
Yeah.
And I said, are you thinking about El Cap? You know, El Cap, which is, you know, what we call it, because he had done Half Dome, which is the other big, you know, wall in Yosemite. And he looked at me and he said something like, yeah, I am thinking about it, but right now it's too scary, but we'll see. And over the years, that's what, you know, as I would check in with him about it, that's what he would always say. He'd always say, we'll see, we'll see. And he'd say it twice. And yeah. So we saw
most definitely. And before we get more into the current with the free climb and the movie a documentary that came out recently, the book is also going back in your life as to your start in climbing. And I've seen you do a presentation before where you talk about your first climb with one of your buddies where you took a clothesline and you kind of went up and got yourself in a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, you know, it all started for me here in Mount Washington Valley. As a kid, my dad would take us to Cathedral Ledge to watch climbers all the time, basically as tourists. And, you know, I would say that we went to Cathedral far more than was normal for a young family because my dad wasn't a climber. So it kind of didn't make sense how much we were there. And I don't think that he realized the seed that he was planting inside of his son. And he should have known better because my hero was Evel Knievel.
Right.
And I wanted nothing more to be a daredevil. And when I saw Cathedral Ledge, I, you know, immediately started thinking, okay, like I'm going to need to be going up this cliff. And so, yeah, that's one of the stories that I tell in the book. That's where it all started. And we somehow didn't kill ourselves. And yeah, it's, not really something we would recommend to anyone. But yeah, we basically just had this white utility rope tied around our waist. We had Converse Chuck Taylors. We made it within 50 feet of the top of the cliff, which I think is kind of impressive, and down without killing each other. But after that, I decided that I was a climber, and that was in about 1985, and I pretty much have never stopped.
And you've also had some fun with groups of friends trying to entice them to go on adventures with you with such things as the Golden Fellows and the Crazy Kids of America.
Yeah, I've told the story of the Crazy Kids of America quite a few times, and in the book I told the story of the Golden Fellows, which is the precursor
right.
to the Crazy Kids of America, and it was all based on this pack of fancy wooden matches that I found in my dad's office that had gold tips, and I was a little bit of a pyromaniac, I guess you could say, and so I brought the matches to the bus stop, and when my buddies saw them, they all decided that they needed those matches really bad, especially when I told them that the tips were real gold. and then I used the matches to bribe the kids into doing dangerous things that they weren't motivated enough to do otherwise. And I became a little bit of a master at persuading kids to do dangerous things. So a lot of parents didn't like me.
You stay away from that guy. You stay away from that, Mark. Well, let's as we go on in the book and you start becoming into the climbing world and you get to meet some incredible legends. But first, let's take a quick step back as to the legends that you looked at and climbers in your crew looked at that were the more or less, I wouldn't say inventors, but the real impetus for the climbing world and how it developed.
Well, you know, right here in Mount Washington Valley, we have some legendary climbers. And, you know, a couple of them are good friends of mine now. One is Jim Surrett.
Right.
Who I do a lot of stuff with nowadays, and we've been friends for a long time. But when I first started climbing, Jim was the man. You know, he was one of the best climbers in the country at that point. And I looked up to the guy, had never met him or anything. And when I finally met him, I remember being so surprised to realize that we were actually contemporaries.
Yes.
Because by the time that I was getting into climbing in the mid-80s, he was already super well established. So I had him built up to monumental proportions in my mind. And then when I met him, I'm like, oh, this guy's like my age.
Yeah.
So I got some catching up to do. But I ended up doing a lot of great adventures with Jim over the years, and he's in the book. He went with me to the Great Trengo Tower in Pakistan in 1999, which was one of my biggest climbs. Another guy that I think we all looked up to and we still do is Henry Barber.
Right.
And I just had dinner with Henry the other night. You know, he lives right here, you know, in North Conway. We actually watched a film of him doing a legendary free solo in the U.K., in the 1970s, where he did a route that had never been soloed before on site, meaning he didn't practice it beforehand. And I think it was maybe the BBC or someone like that filmed it, and just absolutely classic stuff. And I guess, you know, it's important for people to realize that Henry was the equivalent of what Alex is now back in the 1970s. And so, yeah, the story is that this valley has produced some amazing climbers and just athletes in general.
When you go out to Yosemite and you see all the community of climbers there, it's really a tight-knit, almost territorial community, isn't it?
I think you could say that. You know, there's always been, competition for first ascents and first free ascents and that kind of thing. And I have, you know, definitely observed some of that over the years. I think I would say for the most part, though, you know, one of the reasons that I love climbing so much is that I would say that it's what you would call a healthy competition,
mm-hmm.
you know, where we egg each other on. And like with a good partnership, I had this amazing partnership with a guy that I wrote a lot about in the book named Jared Ogden. And we would compete with each other, but in a friendly way. And what it would do is it would bring the level of our climbing, both of us, up higher than it would be otherwise. You know, one guy would do something and you had been trying to do it and you just couldn't do it. And then you'd see him do it and it would somehow allow you to find something deeper inside that you didn't know that you had. And so he and I did, I think we did 9 international climbing expeditions together where we kind of had that kind of thing going on. And, you know, it made our partnership a thing where, you know, the sum of he and I together was much greater than the two individual parts on their own. And so I think that's kind of how it works for the most part in climbing. There have been, you know, some famous episodes in the history of the sport in terms of ethical debates,
right,
and things like that. And so, you know, maybe that might be, you know, something that you've read about. I know I wrote about it in the book.